Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Now Spinning. With me today, I have...
Noah Miller.
Leo Ackerman.
And Jacob Zokvic.
Welcome back, everybody. Today, we decided we liked last week's show so much that we wanted to do the exact same thing again, but this time with the people who are on the show. So today we're going to go around and talk about our Desert Island record picks. I did one of these a long time ago, so I figure I'm going to let everybody else talk about it this time. To start off, we have Noah here, and I think you have quite an interesting album to start off with.
Yeah, so my pick was Weather Report's Black Market. So this came out in 1976, and quite a cast of characters on this album, quite a bit of personnel.
I got just like glancing over the list of people who are on this album. There's just like a ton of names that will pop up all over the place if you're like know anything about jazz.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a super group.
So we've got Joe Zawinul and Wayne Shorter, of course. But then the main bass player for this album is Alfonso Johnson. Now, Jaco Pastorius is on this album, but he only shows up on two tracks. He shows up on Cannonball, and he shows up on Barbary Coast. And then we have Chester Thompson. He's played with Frank Zappa and Genesis. And then we have Narada Michael Walden, who has played with McLaughlin and Mahavishnu, Chick Corea, Jeff Beck, Alan Holdsworth even. And then we also have Don Elias, who has played with Miles Davis on the famous Brew album. And we have Joni Mitchell.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, Don Elias played with Joni Mitchell.
Oh, God.
Yeah, my bad. No, she didn't show up on Weather Report. but then Don Elias also has played with Herbie Hancock and the Brecker Brothers, Pat Metheny, a lot of jazz legends and stuff like that, too. But as far as the track listing, we have the title track, pretty fun, like kind of tropical, sort of islandy kind of vibe, kind of, you know. I did kind of want to sort of fit with the island vibe just a little bit, but I also wanted something to kind of remind me of civilization. So Barbary Coast also has that train stuff going on in the background, and there's also just like market sounds, like people talking. I don't entirely know what language is being spoken, but yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And then we get Cannonball, which was a tribute to the late Cannonball Adderley at this time. Joe Zawinul came up with the melody that Jaco would later play in the intro, that boo doo 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 where boo boo doo doo. Just
it's beautiful.
That was delightful.
Just a little beautiful tone on his bass there. And he basically wrote that melody with his tone in mind. Just really wanted Jocko's sound for that. Then we get Gibraltar, which this one has Alfonso Johnson playing the bass line, you know, and the thing with Johnson's bass lines is that they're very Jaco-esque. It's pretty tough to tell the difference between their playings, and I just think that's, you know, a plus for Johnson there, because if you sound like Jaco, you're doing something right. Yeah. Not necessarily that you want to sound exactly like him. You want to have some differences there, but yeah.
So I have a question. What kind of bass does he play then? Because Jaco famously played homemade fretless.
Yeah.
That kind of gave him some of that distinctive sound.
Yeah. It sounds like he's also playing fretless, at least in some of the lines that he's playing. Even on like Gibraltar, some of the techniques that he's doing, he's like going more towards like the bridge at a certain point when he's doing part of the melody. And he does have very melodic bass playing as well. Similar thing on Elegant People. That one is kind of laid back, sort of mysteriously kind of funky sort of thing going on. But also neat thing about this track, it was sampled in a Portishead song. I want to say it was Strangers. It was off of Dummy. Yeah, it was one of like the first couple songs. I'm blanking on the name on that right now. Three Clowns, that might be like the only low point on this album, is that it's just kind of, it sort of meanders. It just has like very odd sounds, motifs. It does kind of sound like a Three Stooges sort of song.
But they were getting experimental with it. Like, I mean, it's not musically invalid in any way. It's, it's still cool to hear them try something different.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then Barbary Coast. This one is just a lot of fun. The pocket on that with Chester and Jocko, just real nice laid back. One thing about this track is that the bass line, it's a reuse of the bass line in the second half of Come On, Come Over on Jocko's debut album. Yeah, the bass line is just slowed down and pitched down just a little bit. I mean, he's playing it all, but he's playing a different version of it. And then we get Harandu, which is a track that's actually written by Alfonso Johnson. He was the one who kind of composed all that. And this one is just kind of jazz fusion to a T. Really cool, like, spacey, odd time signature riff at the start. And then just, like, jumping right into this really dark kind of, like, brooding kind of groove. Odd time signature, little turnaround thing on the end of the form. Key change down into a darker tone, and then just bringing it back home with the odd time motif at the start. And then sort of kind of peters out with sort of back and forth call and response between like keys, bass, and drums and stuff like that. It's just, yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of intermusical communication there.
And that's honestly like great for a desert island pick, you know what I mean? If you got nothing else to listen to, you're going to want a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing with this is that I mostly also chose this one because I got the CD one Christmas, and I've had it in the car for a long time, and it's kind of been proven to just loop and loop and loop and loop and loop, and I just don't get tired of it. It's, you know, it's a nice little background piece, but there's also plenty of little intricacies that you can hone in on.
Yeah. That's what you want with the Desert Island record. You know, you listen to it a billion times, can't get tired of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we get to mine, that's very similar vibe of just like over and over, man.
Nice.
Very good. So, Leo, you have a... is this something you could listen to over and over again, you think? Or?
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, dear.
The record that I picked is Sound of Silver by LCD Sound System. They're a dance punk group from New York City. This record, I think I need to bring some like historical context into it as to like why I like this record so much. I grew up mostly on like... electronic music. Like I was listening to like I know it's like funny now, but like I was huge into Skrillex. I loved Deadmau5. Yes. I loved like that type of electronic music as a kid.
That debut Skrillex album.
Yeah. Like I loved it. And I loved like dance music like Michael Jackson and stuff like that. Like dance music was my thing as a kid, and I kind of grew out of it. But like this record is like a dance punk record and an indie record primarily. But it is structured like an electronic record because the brain behind it all, James Murphy, worked as a DJ in New York City for years. He was just kind of DJing at parties and stuff for years and years until he realized, like, oh my God, I'm 30. Like, I'm 30 and I haven't made anything of my own or, like, made anything, like, that I can be proud of yet. And so he locked in and essentially started creating electronic music with live instrumentation, like guitars and cowbells and like synths and what have you. And I love loud music. I love like loud rock. I love dancing. I love electronic music. It's just the culmination of like all of these movements that I love and that like are super personal to me from a time where like, you know, I was growing up. These are sounds that I'm familiar with. Like it's the perfect blend of stuff that like appeals to me specifically. Mm-hmm. And I think the first track, Get Innocuous, really like, It's really the perfect encapsulation of what the record is trying to go for, because it's structured like a techno track with real drums and real bass and real piano and whatnot. It's just a perfect blend. Mm. It just rules. You can put it on any time. It traverses through so many genres and sounds seamlessly.
Well, and like punk gets such a bad reputation, you know, for being kind of not complex and not dancey, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You hear the pogo joke where like people just jump up and down. But it's like all those fundamentals are still there. And especially a lot in like the way bass and like the rhythm interplay. Mm-hmm. It's not a far jump to get it right back into dance music.
Oh, yeah.
And like I think this band does it perfectly in that there's all of the elements of punk, and like you said, it's all live instruments and that sort of thing, but like it all feels very beaty, you know, beaty. I don't know. There's not really a word, but you know what I mean. It's all danceable, or at the very least, I'm bobbing my head. Obviously, listeners at home can't see me bob my head, but it's bob your head kind of energy. Yeah, yeah. Groove is a great word to use.
There's a solid foundation underneath everything they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the punk side of it, like, of course, there are some songs like It's Time to Get Away or like Watch the Tapes that are very clearly like, or even North American Scum that are very much like rock forward. Mm-hmm. Like these are mostly punk songs, but I think the attitude of punk really pervades throughout the whole thing. It's incredibly like sarcastic and kind of bratty in like an old man way, weirdly.
It's bordering on like what would become sleaze.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I would honestly go so far as to say he, in like 2001, when he like started this stuff off, he's kind of like the godfather of like that like sleaze 2000s thing, like the electro punk and the electro clash and whatever.
Right.
He's the godfather of that stuff, even though he's like just this old dude from New York City.
His
entire point, like his first debut single was Losing My Edge, and it's basically like, oh my God, I'm 30. All the bands that I thought were so obscure and cool are basic now. And like, that's like the appeal is he's like growing old and cranky, but he's still like making these like fun, sarcastic songs. And I think that contrast is what makes it so fun and playful. It's like this, he's like my favorite grump in the world. He rocks.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that comes through, because I got to tell you, getting old isn't always fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And that like translates in like the emotionally honest points of the record, like All My Friends and New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down. Mm-hmm. Like even Get Innocuous, the opener, even though it's a dance beat, it's very like direct emotional lyricism about like what he's going through and how he's feeling it. But it still has that like 90s sarcasm to it. I don't know. It's a delight. It's a treat. I love the whole thing. Here's a fun little fact to send us off.
Oh, boy.
He was originally supposed to be the producer for David Bowie's Black Star.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was originally supposed to produce the whole thing, but had to turn it down because of, you know, it's a lot of pressure. This is my friend and hero, David Bowie. Mm-hmm. The David Bowie.
Right. Right. Could you imagine being asked?
Imposter syndrome.
I was going to say, like, you can definitely hear, like, kind of, there's a little bit of that Bowie influence in this album as well, especially the final track, I think. Mm. Like the New York, was it New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down? That one, they lean a little bit into like the glam rock thing with like how it's like, it starts off like quiet, but as it goes on, it just like starts building like the crescendo thing. Mm. I definitely heard a lot of that in there.
He rips off David Bowie even more on the next record. Like he was clearly a huge fan, and Bowie asked this guy like, hey, can you please produce my final record? And of course he goes, no, but I can play drums on it.
To split the difference.
So he plays drums on Sue, or In a Season of Crime from Black Star, for those who are familiar. He plays almost all of the instruments on Sound of Silver. He's an incredible musician, multi-instrumentalist.
Is he the only vocalist on this, or is there like someone else singing?
Oh, he's the only one. Yeah.
Okay, because I was wondering, because like the first track, it's a very different vocal style from the one after it. Like the first one, it's very like low monotone. Again, with the Bowie influence, you can kind of hear he's trying to emulate kind of like the Berlin Trilogy kind of vocals on that. And then the next one, it's like I know we were listening to this before we came in, Jacob, and it was interesting vocal style in the second song. It's the big shift, and I honestly, I was wondering, like, there's about to be
he's got range.
He's got a lot of range, yeah. And then also just saying that on the second one especially, like, what's that called? Time to Get Away, and then a couple other tracks. I also heard, I feel, a lot of, like, Talking Heads kind of influence on this. I guess that comes with, the dance punk kind of territory.
Mm-hmm.
But especially the song Us and Them, I wanted to, like, shout out, like, that reminded me a lot of what they were doing with Remain in Light, like Cross-Eyed and Painless. That song definitely sounded a lot like it. So that this album was very interesting to me.
One comparison that I can't seem to get out of my head is when I listen to North American Scum, I just hear like White Stripes or like Jack White.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like an ever-present sort of influence that I kind of hear. And I'm not entirely familiar with LCD sound system outside of this album, so I could be wrong, but they were kind of around the same time.
Oh yeah, no, they were around like the same time.
White Stripes even a little bit before, like proper early White Stripes. You know, mm-hmm. Jack White kind of moving on and past that would have been a bit later, but yeah, around the same time, but definitely potential to have been an influence on the early stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
2007, right? That's when those came out?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. White Stripes would have been around recently before.
Yeah.
That, but yeah. Cool.
That's very true.
Yeah, that's all I got to say. Shout out. Please listen to Sound of Silver. And if you can, listen to The Long Goodbye. It's a 3-hour long live album, and he's better live.
Take an afternoon.
Just take an afternoon. That, yeah. Drink some tea. Relax in a hammock or something.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, play it in a dance club, whatever you got.
listen to the dance album with a coconut in hand and just relaxing on the beach.
That is the place for it.
Brilliant. Oh, right. We're supposed to be on a desert island.
Yeah.
Go listen to it on a desert island.
Yeah, go to an island.
It's essential. Yeah.
It's the most important part. But moving on now, Jacob, you have this is an album that I am a little bit embarrassed that I never listened to until you mentioned you were going to do it for this desert island disc thing.
So I'm going to talk about Loveless by My Bloody Valentine. This is my favorite album of all time, bar none. I was like 15 years old. A friend of mine brought it in class one day and was like, go listen to this. Like, go home, just put on some headphones, listen to the whole thing through. Don't do anything else. Just listen to it. Go lie in bed if you have to. And it was the perfect experience. So like, I loved kind of like psychedelic music growing up. I always liked to like punk and alternative. And this is like, in my mind, the like ultimate culmination of a lot of different musical ideas into a new musical ideas. So this was like the very beginnings of what would become shoegaze. It's just super heavily distorted. It's super unique. None of it sounds traditional. None of it sounds just like a rock song should, you know what I mean? But it's like perfect. So I love it in that way, and I can listen to it anywhere, in any context, you know what I mean? If you just want to jam out to music, perfect. Put it on as loud as you can tolerate and listen to this one. But it can be great for any setting, okay? If you need to go outside and you're mowing, you know what I mean? You got your headphones on and the mower's loud as crap, doesn't matter. Listen to it. It will be perfect for mowing. You can listen to it for before bed. Just turn it down nice and quiet, which isn't really how My Bloody Valentine is meant to be listened to, but it totally works still.
It'll be like white noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, except it's just, you know, Belinda Butcher's vocals just subtly in the background, you know what I mean? And all the like highs coming through. But yeah, it's perfect for me. I listen to it in any setting all the time, and it's just a constant, like, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm not sure what to listen to, I can go back and listen to this. And I think part of that is because it feels so non-structured. The lyrics are barely audible, you know what I mean? The vocals are very much used as an instrument, less as a like way to communicate an idea. And I just think that's perfect, where, you know, if you're in a good mood, it meshes well with your good mood. If you're in a bad mood, it can kind of resonate emotionally, too, in spite of not really, you know, again, it feels very neutral in that way. But it still resonates with the soul, if you will.
You can kind of project yourself onto it.
Sure, sure. That's a great way to phrase it, yeah. But I think it's also important to recognize like how influential this album was. You know, there's so many bands now and through the 90s and things that used that same sort of guitar sound. So I think it's called Glide Technique, Glide something. Glide guitar, there you go. And it was very much pioneered by Kevin Shields, the main creative force behind My Bloody Valentine. And it's just holding on to the whammy bar, tremolo arm, whatever you want to call it on the guitar, while you're playing and really giving, you know, just that subtle bend. He famously uses jazz masters and he alters all of them to just not really, you know, do fat dive bombs and stuff like that, but just this like subtle bend as he's playing the entire time. And it sounds so cool, and you can hear it in so many places, like, you know, Smashing Pumpkins picked it up immediately. And it really meant a lot to a lot of people, and that kind of worked against us in that. So this album came out in 1991, was a huge success. Everybody was extremely excited about a follow-up, and Kevin Shields apparently wrote two full albums worth of music after this and said, none of this is good enough. Nobody can ever hear this. and then proceeded to, in his own words, lose his mind. So we didn't get a follow-up album until 2013, and that was basically, I think technically the second record that I ever bought. And admittedly, I didn't even buy it. My dad ordered it online for me because it was a self-release by them, so you could only order it from like one UK-based website. And that album, MBV, their second album, has been a constant, one of my favorite vinyls to have. But if I'm getting dropped on a desert island, it's Loveless all the way. Like I said, it is the perfect vibe to listen to in any setting,
even after a shipwreck, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You've got to deal with the, you know, we were talking about being emotionally resonant. Like, you got to deal with the emotions of being trapped on a desert island. I'm not gonna sit there and listen to something like Joni Mitchell. We were talking about, like, I'm not listening to Joni Mitchell when I'm feeling sad and lonely on a desert island. Like, love it, but no way, man. You know. And that's, you know, like, so many of my other picks would be similar in that way, in that, like, you can listen to them anytime. I feel like that's very much the essence of the Desert Island pick, is that it's your favorite and it can be listened to just over and over. And I think, you know, part of why this album works so well is, like, all the tracks really blend into each other. There's not really clear separations until, like, boom, there's a hard snare and the super heavy guitar is hit, but it doesn't feel like something new is happening necessarily. You know what I mean? It all works so well as an album. And that's, like, I can tell you the name of some of the tracks, but I've never bothered to learn any of them, like, properly, because I don't sit there and listen to a single song. You know what I mean? I almost exclusively listen to this album as a full album, beginning to end. I don't know. It's just perfect for me.
Yeah, I was going to say also, like, just based off of my listening experience to it, I can see what you mean. Like, you just get lost into this. Mm-hmm. Like, one song starts playing, and, like, by the time you figure out what's going on, it's like another one. And it's just, they put you into a trance almost, kind of, when you listen to it all in the one setting.
Trance is, I think, a great word.
Yeah.
And I think that works really well with what the music is it's like, you know, none of it's in like an obvious minor major key kind of sense. It's so dissonant, you know what I mean, with the you know, the guitar constantly bending up and down in pitch, and a lot of the way it's written, you know, the parts are dissonant to each other,
and just the timbre of the instruments too.
Yeah. And it's never like ugly, you know what I mean? Dissonance can certainly sound very grating, but I think this is just, like, written very well, obviously, but it's also mixed to perfection. Is supposed to have been an incredibly expensive album to record. There's some debate about that. Kevin Shields is like, it wasn't that expensive, but there's other people that say, like, dude, this bankrupted the recording company.
It was like $1 million or something on an indie label, right? Mm-hmm.
They claim. Again, Kevin Shields is like, nah, it wasn't that bad.
I'm going to trust the company who was put out of business by the guy. Yeah.
But it shows, though. I mean, it sounds amazing. You know, there's no part of it where you're like, oh, I wish they had this thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we have that discussion sometimes about, like, digital versus back when people were using, you know, recording the tape, and it's like there's no moment where you're like, oh, I wish they had this so this sounded crisper. It all works, and I think it very much connects in that way. But yeah, my favorite album of all time. I highly recommend you go listen to it, and I'm gonna, same advice that was given to me when I was 15 years old, go home, listen to just this, put on some headphones or just play it really loud in the room, do nothing else, and just experience it. There you go.
Right on. Very nice. Yeah, I think that does about wrap it up for today, though. That's a lot of really great album picks. If you go home and listen to any of these, listen to all of them, I have to say, like, I know we usually say, like, if you have to do one thing, you listen to one thing from this, but I really can't pick one. Yeah, I went into this, I listened to all of these, I think, for, like, the first time just this last week, and I have to say, like, you guys, really great taste, I think. Really great taste. But
thank you.
I know, appreciate it.
But if you want to hear more interesting music from other people who also have really good music taste, you can check out our Vinyl Record Club meetings. which will be linked along with the show on our website. You'll also find there, besides just the schedule, you'll find meeting themes, past playlists from our meetings, past podcasts, and anything else you'd ever really need to know about our club. It's a very welcoming group of people. You're welcome whether you have been collecting records your whole life or you've literally never bought a vinyl in just your entire life ever. Complete novice, expert, doesn't matter. As long as you're willing to hang out with some very nice people and listen to some music that is outside of your comfort zone. Thank you all for tuning in, and hope to see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you.
Love you.
Love you too.
Bye.